Cherry Developer News, episode number 45, for Thursday, July 5th, 2012. Well, it's been a long time since we had a developer news. Let's get into it, and we're going to try to keep doing these a little more often. Mostly it's been because I've been having a hard time finding a co-host. Our co-hosts are all busy. So I decided to just kind of start collecting things and also rework the way we're doing the developer news a little bit so that it's more consistent from show to show. So first of all, our general flow is now going to be we're going to do sponsorships and events up front. Then we're going to do outside developer news. Then we're going to get into some podcasts we've been writing or listening to. And then we're going to get into the Chariot Authors Corner. It turns out there's a fair amount of content that we do that I think is useful. It ties right into the kinds of things people are interested in. So we'll put that in there as well. Different bloggers and writers and presenters from Chariot as well. So hopefully you'll find that useful. Anytime you want to give us any feedback, I'm at TechCast, all one word, T-E-C-H-C-A-S-T. You can also hit us up through email. It's TechCastFeedback, all one word, at ChariotSolutions.com. I'll get that as well. So let's start out with our sponsors. Obviously, we're sponsored by my employer, Chariot Solutions. I run our education services there. We have training in Spring, Hibernate, Scala, Maven, and more, as well as being a great development shop. Right now, if you go to chariotsolutions.com/education, you'll see that we have a couple things going on. One of the biggest items, and one that's very time sensitive, is that we now have an all-new updated Spring web course. It used to be called Spring Rich Web, but VMware has just updated it, and it's a great update, frankly. You're going to get a lot of content that you didn't have access to before. They've revamped the chapters. They've updated it for Spring 3.1, a newer version of the Spring Source Tool Suite, so it's not as clunky. You have two whole chapters on Ajax, for example, one including jQuery. So it's very, very good. They've really changed the focus and focuses much more on the Spring side of it as opposed to like kind of a, it was a little more ranging at the end before. We're running a course on Tuesday, July 24th, and if you use the code TechCast, all one word, T-E-C-H-C-A-S-T, you'll save $200 on registrations. And I'd love to see you there. I'm teaching the course myself. Also, coming up towards the end of July is Scalathon. And Scalathon is something we sponsor. The Scalathon is at scalathon.org. And that will take you to the registration page. Scalathon isn't just a conference with lots of presentations. It's actually where you go down there and you hack on Scala with the developers of Scala frameworks and such. So if you go to their page, you'll see all sorts of stuff that's going on. It's going to be at the Quorum at the University City Science Center downtown in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, on Saturday, July 28th and Sunday, July 29th. Even if you're not a deep Scala person, but you're getting into it, it wouldn't hurt to go. Rub elbows with some of the people that are doing development, learn what they're doing. They will give basically lightning talks or short talks about what the projects are they're working on in some cases. And if you follow at Scalathon, S-C-A-L-A-thon, T-H-O-N, you can find out what's going on there. We all are running training around that as well, not to plug too much, but just because it's time sensitive. We're actually running training on the Fast Track to Scala. Jamie Allen from TypeSafe will be co-running that with our Michael Pig, who's going to be our Scala instructor going forward. And so if you go to Chariot Solutions and go to our website, also you can just go to the Scalathon page and look at the training. We're offering it on Thursday and Friday, July 19th and 20th. And there's a discount on the Scalathon page. Also, they're offering, from TypeSafe, they're actually offering two training courses. They're offering Fast Track to Play, which is a web framework that basically they bought the rights to, are still working with Java, but are also including the Scala framework, Scala language, rather, as a way of writing code for the Play framework. And also Akka, which is a actor framework and software transactional memory framework. There's a Fast Track to Akka class as well. So before you go to the hackathon for the for Scalathon rather, you have all these things you can go to and kind of brush up before you head out there. All right, so I think that's enough for sponsorship and events. Let's get into some news here. So the first news item, and I think it's very pertinent, is we just got word just this week that Rod Johnson is leaving VMware. Now, nothing to panic about, but it is kind of a major moment. If you think about what Spring is, and for those who don't know what Spring is, it's a framework that sits on top of the Java language to, as Rod Johnson, I think, put it, or at least coined a phrase, make it suck less. And the idea would be that, you know, instead of writing these complicated Java enterprise applications where you're building XML-based descriptors back in the day when he built this, you know, why don't you just put things in a servlet container? You don't need an expensive EJB container. You don't need a full EJB just to run business logic. And he had an original book that he wrote that was the basis of all of this work. And so, you know, you can go to the link that I have on the page in his post. He talks about that. The book itself is, let's see here, Expert One-on-One J2E Design Development. And you can actually get a copy of this if you're curious from historical purposes. It was written in 2002, but it's an interesting read because he basically wrote it as a screed against bloated software patterns. And if you look what Spring has done over the last 10 years, I mean, it was 2002 that he put this out, which means he wrote it earlier than 2002. He was really forward-thinking. He and his group of merry band gentlemen and ladies did a whole lot of changes to the way people approach Java. They didn't necessarily invent injection, dependency injection, but they certainly built a platform for it that was very straightforward and easy to pick up and easy to use. There were a lot of things around that framework that just made it grow up out of nothing into a basically a really comprehensive set of APIs to be productive as a Java programmer. So my hat's off to Rod Johnson, Jürgen Haller, and all the others for doing a tremendous job. If you go to the blog post that Rod points out, you know, he gives the whole screed for why he started this in the beginning. He talks about the technology that is being adopted by Spring. And if you use Spring long enough, what you'll find is, as a Java developer, you generally find simplification APIs that simplify just enough, but not too much. So in a lot of these frameworks, you'll see, okay, write a piece of code, and then magic happens all the way through, and you have no idea how it happens. With Spring, it's really, let me get this configured for you. And for the most part, it's we'll give you four or five liners that would normally take you 30 lines of code. The best example would be something like the JDBC template, where, you know, JDBC developers for years getting data in and out of a database had to set up a connection and a result set and a statement. And they had to set that up outside of a try-catch block because they had to clean up after it if it failed. And they had to do all their code, and they had to try to catch SQL exception and then deal with that. Do they throw an exception up the stack? What do they do? Well, Spring came up with the JDBC template, which was a marvelous way of doing it. They have essentially one to two couple-line methods that you just, you know, write basically a query for int, put a SQL statement in it, and it looks for the one result and brings you back a number. Does all the try catches for you, sets up the connections. So not that I want to make this an ad for Spring, but the point around it is that they looked at how developers were productive or weren't, and they looked and said, well, how can we make their lives better? And even today, if you look at the things they're doing in general, that's what they've been doing going forward. Even though they were acquired by a big company, I think that the pattern had been set that it's, you know, a simplifications API, a container, and what they call aspect-driven programming, AOP. So those three things inform the work that everyone is doing. So again, hats off to Rod Johnson. I wish him well, and I hope that the next thing he does is equally as fantastic. You know, this happens with leaders in business. He certainly sold SpringSource to VMware. I didn't expect him to stay forever. You know, and as you get to the point where he is, I'm sure he's just burning to do the next big thing. So keep an eye on him. But it means in no way, shape, or form does it mean that there's anything going to happen to the Spring framework, in my opinion, that's going to be jeopardizing it. I think it's built. There's a number of developers, a whole bunch of talented people that work there, and I wish them all well. Okay, on that front, there's also an article that I saw mid last month that discussed how the Spring development process has moved along a little bit. And what I mean by that is they've kind of reorganized where they're putting things. So let me see if I can find the article here. Infrastructure changes in. So it's called Spring Project Infrastructure Changes. Let me just look for that. Okay, I had to go search for that. The actual article is called Spring Project Infrastructure Updates by Chris Beams, who is working there as a developer. So at this point, what they've done is they've moved over to GitHub, and that happened, I think, about 6 months ago. Spring itself is actually being built on GitHub, which makes it nice because if you see a change you want to make, you can always fork it, you know, or make a patch and submit it. And so they encourage that, you know, Spring Roux. Almost everything, if not everything, is there now. There is a Spring Source organization on GitHub. So that actually is github.com/springsource. And you can see that everything pretty much is there. They've got all the projects open. You can clone them. You can do your work with them. Build them from source if you'd like. They also have moved so that they're pushing all their published artifacts, any GA versions, to Maven Central, as they have been doing. But anything that they're doing with, you know, snapshots or milestone builds, they're going to actually have a repository called, it was maven.springframework.org, but now it's called build. Is it build.springframework.org? No, repo.springsource.org. So repo.springsource.org is the Maven build. And they actually have a CI server at build.springsource.org, which I'm pulling up here, which is Bamboo. And you can see the status of all of the current builds for all the projects. It's pretty amazing. So if you go to build.springsource.org, you'll see those. They should be tied in with Jira, I'm assuming. If I'm taking a look at any of this stuff, let's see Gradle. Yeah, they're building Gradle here. That's interesting. But yeah, looks like they have, they should have Jira hooked into this. And they show all the different builds. So if you want to get a feel for what's going on there, you can find that out. And let's see. They're now starting to build with Gradle as opposed to Maven. Interesting turn. I know that a couple of developers there really did not like working with Maven as a development tool. They felt that they had a lack of control over it. I know, for example, that Graham Rocher of the Grails team, because he was a Groovy programmer as well, was really disenchanted with Maven. It's not a knock on it. It's just that that's what that set of developers seemed to be leaning forward in their builds and thought maybe they could do a lot of things more agile with the Gradle build language. So that's a Groovy-based build tool. If you want to take a look at things, they get into how to build the Spring projects, for example, with Gradle, and they even use something called the Gradle wrapper, which essentially is a shell script, and what it does is it will actually download the right version of Gradle to do the build for the project that you've downloaded. So it should make it very easy to start building source to try to test out your patches to the open source projects. The concept around contributions now is that it looks like they have pull requests. So in other words, if you make a change, let's say you fork a repository, you want to make a patch to Spring integration. So you fork Spring integration, you make your change, and you do a pull request to the project team. There's a contributor guidelines document that they list in here to show you how to do that. And apparently there have been over 100 pull requests for the Spring framework alone. Not everything gets in. It depends on a review process. But if you're the kind of person that could quickly do a good patch to something, take advantage of this. And certainly you can start getting yourself to contribute to open source in a relatively easy way. All right, so that's pretty much it. There's some information on the Spring forums. They basically, you know, say focus there, and they're looking to improve it over time. There is a tags section in Stack Overflow, for example, and they say that Stack Overflow is a good alternative way to do it. So if you go to StackOverflow/tags and type Spring, there are 17,000 entries there. So, you know, what they're saying is, in addition to the forum.springframework.com, or I'm sorry, forums. springsource.org, whatever the URL is. I'll have to put a link in the notes. Now you can also take advantage of Stack Overflow, which is a place where people are really spending a lot of time, you know, contributing. It's kind of a points game when people submit information there. So some people are really into that, and that means you get a lot more interaction. All right. Okay, another piece of news. FuseSource. FuseSource is an open source software company, and FuseSource was just recently acquired by Red Hat. Another interesting development here. So let's bring up the press release. Okay. So let's see. The announcement itself is on FuseSource's site, Red Hat to acquire FuseSource. And it says, as I said, the tagline here, it says, two gorillas in the open source market join forces. Okay. So anyway, so Larry Alston, who's the president of FuseSource, put a nice little note out basically saying that both companies are aligned in their vision for open source, about their value of the community. They both develop products that have best-in-class open source projects behind them. And they're both contributed to going back and, you know, donating to the community. So it's interesting. It kind of is a consolidation. I mean, Red Hat has been doing very well, and I think they've acquired a few companies in the past year or two. Not going to speak from authority on that. But I do know that's where JBoss is located. And JBoss is definitely doing a lot of work. Moving, actually, if you look at what they've done over the last 5 years, they have really taken on a lot of pushing the community forward for Java EE. And in fact, their Scene framework was a response, a direct response that said, you know, we can still do dependency injection in Java EE. And, you know, we can do the same kind of agile things that Spring does. Let's put together our framework. And so it had the same kind of concepts where it had dependency injection. And it had the concept of even conversational state and things like that. Main difference of that would be, you know, things like state-driven versus stateless programming. And so there's some flavor differences. But the point is, Red Hat acquired JBoss. JBoss has their app server, you know, the JBoss engine. They've got queuing. They've got messaging. They've got some integration. There is some overlap here. It'll be curious to see what happens. I think that because Fuse is so mature, because it's their main flagship product, I'm assuming that that's really going to be the flagship product from Red Hat's perspective. But who knows? I don't want to speak for them. So it should be very interesting to see them over time and how the merger of these two and the absorption, so to speak, of Fuse Source's team into JBoss's team works. So that's a very interesting piece of news. Let's see, what else do we have here? Now, let's talk about some podcasts. I only have two this week, but I plan on doing more podcast links for you over the coming episodes. I also plan on having these more often. First one is an outside one. It's the Java Posse. So I love the Java Posse podcast. They're always entertaining. It's a good group of guys. They always make the topics not boring. And so the topic that they had for number 387 was NoSQL. And I thought that was a really good podcast. It runs a bit long. So it's Roundup 12, NoSQL. And yeah, it runs about, what's the length on this one? It's hard to tell. Let me just kick it off. An hour and four. But what it is it's actually a session from the Posse Roundup. And they talk about a number of things. They basically talk about using NoSQL databases in the wild. So if you're looking at like how people get things done with them and what they feel about them, for example, there was a whole talk around, you know, when you're going back with a large amount of data to your company, and you have to justify taking hours to load it and hours to index it, because a lot of the NoSQL databases, it's very easy to get data out or quick to get data out for large data sets, but it may not necessarily be as fast to get the data in, for example. They go into those kind of topics. They talk about MongoDB. They talk about the concept behind Bigtable. Other tools of note here, there's a bunch of them, but Cassandra, again, I mentioned earlier. Hadoop, which is that MapReduce data engine. Neo4j, they talk about that. Node actually as a back engine for dealing with NStore, I think. And then they talk about some other things as well, Redis. So it's interesting. If you want to hear about what's going on in the NoSQL world out there in the wild, give that one a listen. That's very good. I also want to point you to the Chariot TechCast. We've been doing some reorganization of our content, actually. And so now, if you go to the techcast.chariotsolutions.com site, I have a little note that says Chariot is moving the new home of our emerging technology podcast and screencast is Chariot Emerging Tech. So if you click on that link, you'll go to the Emerging Tech site, which is a brand new site. It incorporates things from ETE, Emerging Technologies. So if you haven't gone to that show, we have a ton of screencasts for you to look at. We have the Chariot TechCast. We have our developer news that you're listening to now, our business podcasts. And then you can even subscribe to feeds of other things as well. But anyway, the one I want to point out is also related to the type safe stuff. We had Jamie Allen on about a month ago, and he was talking about just the movement in the Scala world, you know, what's been going on, what's coming up with Scala 2.10, how builds are improving over time in terms of speed and things like that. So that's an interesting listen. He used to work for Chariot. He's on a number of our podcasts, and he's a good guy. So if you liked any of the podcasts that we did together, including the one we did way back when about Akka together, you should give a listen to 72. It's a good one. All right, now, this is where we're going to start using some time, if we have content, to talk about some of the things we put out there. We do a whole lot of blogging and screencasts and things like that, so let's get into it. First things first, if you go to the ETE 2012 screencasts link on emergingtech.chariotsolutions.com, we've got a ton of screencasts again, and most recently we just put out ones from ETE from James Shore on Kanban, Lean, and Large-Scale Agile. We also had Junus Lehtinen, Vadin, RA and Java without plugins of JavaScript. These were all at ETE. Trotter Cashin on Cloud Foundry. He reviewed that as a private platform, as a service platform. And then we had a really interesting one that you probably could get a kick out of, which was Tony Morris and Runar Bjarnson. And they actually did this through Skype. And I remember when they came up to this, they said, we want to do a presentation, but the person who's doing the presentation is in Australia. I believe, and really can't be here. So can we somehow remote him in? And I remember thinking at the time, oh God, remoting at a conference where Wi-Fi is always going to be a problem no matter what place you go. And I was on pins and needles the whole time. But we came up with, let's use Skype. Let's remote him in on the desktop and Skype video. That way, if the video fails, we still have the audio. And let's make sure that the person that was here would have full access to the presentation so that essentially they could continue on in case that the remote person, Tony, was not available. And it turns out it worked great. You know, you'll see on the screencast, you'll see, you know, the remote connection back, and you'll see them discussing things. And I thought it went really, really well. So that's another interesting one. Functional programming applied, dependency injection without the gymnastics, right on that page that's if you click on the ETE 2012 screencast menu link. And then finally, Brian McAllister, also a friend of Chariot's who works at Ning, he had Atlas, which is a tool that he put together, or they put together, I should say, over at Ning. So anyway, lots of content there. The next thing is it's going to be a series of two blog articles from Lyle Anderson. If you go to blog.chariotsolutions.com, he's been working with trying to find ways to do migrations in a better way than what are available to you traditionally in other languages. So for example, Java doesn't really have something like DB rake migrations in Rails, or Liquibase as an API, but it tends to be Groovy driven, if I remember correctly. And it really was kind of, you fire up essentially Hibernate mappings and you manipulate those mappings in your startup, if I remember correctly. And they're both DSL based, domain specific languages. So he was looking around to try to find a more Java-friendly tool called Flyway. And so when he found Flyway, he thought this could be the thing we could use. And it looks like the migration ship with the application. You can fire them up automatically when you start up if you want to. You know, you can use regular old SQL scripts, which is huge because a lot of these tools, it's hard to write SQL in them. You're not locked in. So, you know, you can have placeholders for various things and things like that. So it's a flexible SQL script with templating, it looks like. And you could even do Java classes for advanced migrations. It's a very interesting platform. That's at code.google.com/p/flyway. And again, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. And then so he goes into in the first article, his main focus is to, you know, show how to configure it. And he goes through a whole process using a multi-Maven project build, multi-module build. He has a parent module. He tries to configure the Flyway plugin to the parent module. And then, you know, using various settings. So the problem is he first did it in, let's see, I think it was the parent module. And then when he tried to run it in the child with the Flyway colon status goal to try to do something, it failed. So then he looked and saw what the problem was. He had to configure JDBC. Then he had to set up the dependencies for the SQL driver he was using and for the core of Flyway itself and the configuration section. And then he figured out that, you know, he had to find a way to try to skip the plugin in the parent POM so it wouldn't blow up and make that the default. And so that it would only run when he wants to run it from the parent module to run against the child. So he goes through this whole thing. Then he shows some basic ways of doing migrations. And then, you know, he kind of wraps up with a postscript and essentially says that it was successful for him and that, you know, the configuration works, but you have to pay close attention to how Maven plugins work when you're in a multi-module project if you want to share the configuration from the top and implement it down below. He actually worked on a patch to it, and I think he submitted the patch back that honors the Maven skip tag. And I know he's working on a second article, so that should be up by the time you go to blog.chariotsolutions.com, and I will put a link to that in the show notes as soon as I have that as well. So that's Lyle Anderson from Chariot, a two-part article series on Flyway migrations, Java migrations, SQL migrations running from Maven. Anatoly Polinsky, he happens to be a Chariot architect as well, and so he has a blog entry around Scala using something called the can build from construct. And so it's at his web page is www.cam.com, dotkam. And so this is actually from May, but since we're talking about, you know, Scala stuff, I figured it'd be useful. So can build from is something that allows us to get into collections, and I'm certainly going to completely destroy this. But anyway, let's see. It's talking about how to essentially create collections and build them with a builder pattern. The builder pattern is this can build from construct. I looked through it a couple times, and I'm not a Scala person, so it hurts my head. But if you're actually in Scala mode, I think it'd be a nice little puzzle to go through. Apparently, he has a couple of other ways to do these things as well. He mentions the fact that CanBuildFrom also can do function currying and things like that. But nevertheless, it's definitely an article that is worth reading if you're a Scala person and you're working in collections. All right. See how badly I mangled that one. Anyway, next one on the list is John Shepard, also another Chariot Architect developer. And John put together a quick blog post just more as a reference article or a reference item for printing out the different Unicode 16 items that might come up when you're trying to do grammar parsing. So if you're doing checks for lowercase characters, uppercase characters, you know, doing title casing, you want to maybe find out things like where do the capital letters start and end, or, you know, what's a dash punctuation symbol or a line separator. So he wrote a little piece of code that you can certainly download. It's a little Maven build that runs and kicks out for character.getType all the different settings, so it can help you kind of pick that up. So if you get into a Unicode UTF-16 environment and you're parsing some sort of grammar, this is a little reference for you. All right, then another thing is we actually have article that I published up on java.net around the Ruin Action book. I normally don't toot my horn, but I'm kind of thrilled with this one. So on java.net, it was on the homepage. Let's see if it's there now. Yeah, let's see. It was on the spotlights. So I'm just going to click on more on spotlights and see if it's there. More on spotlights. That's what I am. So yeah, if you click on more on the spotlights link on the right, you can get to it. And I'll put a link in the show notes. Spring Roo and Webflow. And so we're going to do a series of posts from Spring Roo in Action. I'm calling the cutting room floor, because there are certain things that when you write a book, you end up having to chuck because there's just only so much space. And, you know, the reviews come back and say, you know, one person liked it, but everyone else was like, I don't really necessarily need this content. And so Webflow was kind of that thing. Webflow doesn't exactly integrate nicely in Roo yet. What it does is it will configure Webflow for you, but the tags library and the form library isn't quite up to snuff for it. And I've mentioned this to the team. I don't know if they're looking at it, but it's something that can be improved if someone wants to write another add-on. But if you do Webflow setup, it will configure Webflow. It will set up like a straw man Webflow for you and configure all the different Spring constructs. So I go in and show you how to set that up, and then I show you the flow itself, talk about a little bit about what Webflow is, and then we look at the definition, talk about the different flow states, how to work with them. And then we talk about the challenge, which is essentially that the tag libraries don't support it. And then I show you how easy it is to write your own tag. So we create a Webflow form tag, which basically sets up the post back to itself form. You know, we're using the same Spring constructs, Spring Roo constructs. We're using the util panel, JSPX. And then we're going to use Webflow form button as another tag. Webflow events are triggered by buttons or links. And you can extend this and do links if you want to as well and build your own tag once you're done with this. And essentially they use an underscore event ID underscore event tag. And so I tell you how that works. And then I show how to use the tag library in a Spring Roo view. So that made it to java.net. I'm thrilled that I was put up there, and I'll leave the link in the show notes as well. And then we actually had a lot of response to this next thing. If you go to chariotsolutions.com/presentations, we put up all the ETE presentations, all the PDFs, and we put up all of our own presentations for where we go out there. At the present time, Andrea Wright's presentation is on the second page. It's from 2012-03-04, if you're looking at the date. And it's called Polyglot Programming with Python, Python Scala Interop. And we posted this, and it got a huge number of views. I think it's because it's extremely well written. Andrea actually has a background as a writer, and she's really, really smart. And one of her interesting areas that she's been focusing on is the interaction between languages, so interoperability, how to call one language from another. And I've seen various versions of what she kind of led up to in this. But she took on a presentation that she's calling Snakes and Ladders, actually. And it's polyglot programming using Python and Scala. So what she did was she took this presentation from March, and she annotated the heck out of it, basically writing information up about all the different slides with lots of details. So if you go through it, you'll see all sorts of ways of calling Python from Scala. So like she talks about JEP, which is one way of doing embedding. She talks about, let's see here, Java native interface code, natural script language function invocation. So that was Daniel Spiewak's talk. So she invokes that and discusses it. She talks about, let's see what else in here. It's a really, really long and good talk. Apply dynamic, and you name it. It just keeps on going from there. Jython scripting, Python and Java. Then we look at the reverse. How does Python host Scala code? And so she goes into examples like that. Just a fantastic, very detail-oriented, very, very well-researched, tremendous article. I'm very glad I work with people like this. So if you go to our presentations site, you can just search Polyglot Python from the search page at chariotsolutions.com. It will come up. All right. So that's it for the developer news. I am planning on doing these on a much more frequent basis. In the summer, it gets tough just because people are taking vacations. And also, I get busy after emerging tech. I've been spending an enormous amount of time putting those presentations up, working with our presentation producer, who's been doing a ton of work, Steven Metzger. And I'll have to give him a shout out in the links, too, because he's really, if you ever need videographers, he's the one, man. So anyway, I'm going to stop talking now, and this has been the Chariot Developer News, episode 45, and make it a good, hopefully, week. Hopefully I can do this next week with you as well. Take care.